Welcome in to the Blanket Coverage Podcast. Today is Tuesday, April 20th. And soccer was dead for like 2 days, but it's back again. It's back again.
Yes.
The European Super League is, of course, what we're talking about. This is today's cold open. And Jack, you have many thoughts on this. Is soccer back?
So I wrote about a full page of script kind of accidentally. And given how much script we write, that is pretty wild about one individual topic, especially one not out of one of the major sports tend to cover. But I just sort of went nuts on this because I, like basically every other fan of soccer on earth, hated this with every ounce of my body. Now, again, the main concept of saying let's have all the great teams in the world get together and play for one big championship is a cool idea. But we already do that. There's already a Champions League. It's been around for decades and it's got its problems, but we already have that. The only reason this league was created, the sole reason, was to make a ton more money and have zero interest in any of the fans or the players or anything other than just what the owners do. And if you bring up, oh, well, then what about the other things? Because small clubs can win. Small clubs have a chance and small clubs can get far. The Super League basically prevents that because the structure of what the league was going to be was they said Real Madrid, the big six clubs in the Premier League, which is Tottenham, Man City, Man United, Liverpool, Arsenal, and Chelsea, plus AC Milan, Atletico Madrid, Barcelona, Inter Milan, Juventus, and then three more expected at the time to be put in. Now, Paris Saint-Germain in, of course, Paris, and then Borussia Dortmund and Bayern are all not included here. Those specifically said also Red Bull Leipzig. They all said, we're not even going to bother with it. Which good for them. And so they were saying they're going to come in here. Now, the Super League team said, okay, we're going to stay in the domestic leagues, but the fixtures are going to be midweek, which basically means your players aren't playing three times a week. So you're just going to field joke teams one of those times. So you're going to screw over all the regular leagues. And then with adding this on top of it, UEFA, which is the governing body for European soccer, and then FIFA, of course, for worldwide soccer, basically we're like, well, we're just not going to let you do this. And they can't prevent the league from being created, but they can do the inverse of that and say, well, you can't play in anything anymore. So you want to play in the Euros, you want to go to North America and play in the Gold Cup if you're an American that's playing for one of these teams, you want to go play in the Pan African Cup, you can't do that. All that's barred. Can't touch it anymore. A World Cup, even the World Cup, yep, you can't play in the World Cup. So they basically were saying the rest of soccer would be cut off entirely and it would go pretty horrifically on that end. So the UEFA president actually said himself, and this is a quote from him, this is spitting in the face of football and is fueled by greed. He also said, we didn't know we had snakes so close to us. Now we know.
It takes a lot. Big soccer look like the good guys.
Yeah, because like, UEFA and FIFA get hate all the time for good reason.
Right, yeah. I mean, just look at the entire fiasco of the World Cup being held in Qatar in 2022.
And even Russia. Yeah, both those were total
all the
cheeks.
Bribery that was involved, all the mm-hmm. international ports that went through, the international scandal that was. And these are the good guys, the voices of the people, quote unquote, I guess in this case, against maybe what might be the most universally hated idea in sports history.
I mean, the wildest thing is that the whole thing that I mentioned about the World Cup being banned from, that was in January. FIFA said that in January. If you try to pull this, we're going to say you can't even play in the World Cup. And then fast forward to late April, and they still try to make it. Everyone hates it. And I mean, seriously, we're recording this Tuesday, late afternoon on Tuesday. This was announced like Sunday. I mean, it's only been around like 48 hours plus. I mean, it's barely even been here. And when I mentioned Super League for all the super teams, let's go through a couple of these teams and where they've been recently. AC Milan, no title since 2011. Inter Milan, none since 2010. Juve is fourth in Serie A right now. Atletico Madrid, none since 2014. Arsenal, no Premier League title since 2004. Chelsea, fifth in Premier League. Manchester United, nothing since 2013. And then Tottenham, not only is their own disaster themselves, they are ninth Tottenham is ninth in the Premier League right now. Ninth. And they're getting offered a spot, a permanent spot. And that's the other thing, is that there's no rotation. These teams will be permanently in here. And that is the entire point of the Champions League, which, again, it's mostly the big clubs make it that far, but that's just because they have more money and are able to do more stuff. But at the end of the day, you can have your upsets. You can have your fun teams happen. And it happens. You have your Leicester Cities winning the Premier League. That doesn't exist under this model. And that is the entire antithesis to what soccer is as a sport.
And the postseason model, obviously, it doesn't line up. But I think this reeks of college football in like a lot more ways than one.
Yeah.
This is really just a money-making ploy by kind of the biggest, by the owners of the teams. This situation, just to draw more comparison to college football, reminds me of when Greg Schiano got hired for like a day at Tennessee. Do you remember that? The entire reason that Jeremy Pruitt was hired was because the fan base, led by Clay Travis, hated Greg Schiano so much that they not only got Schiano out of the job within like 2 days of it being leaked or announced or whatever, they got the AD fired in the process, and they got Phil Fulmer hired as the athletic director. That was a ridiculous situation altogether. But this reminds me of that, just like how much power the fans really do have with social media nowadays. When something is actually universally hated, you'll probably know it. And I think we're almost to that point with the college football playoff. But the college football analogy stretches further. And I saw a lot of tweets about this. So who would be like the 15 teams in college football that get in? Because Texas and Michigan are definitely up there, even though they've had a lack of recent success, like a few of these teams.
It depends on what you want to base it on, because if you're going to base it on the same way the Super League is, the only thing that's going to matter is money. It doesn't matter what the current record is. It doesn't matter. So like you almost.
So we get Texas, USC, and Michigan in there.
I think Clemson would have to at this point because they're too rich now.
Ohio State and Alabama.
Those are easy givens. USC, Southern Cal would be there, which Southern Cal would be the Tottenham of the group of like, Georgia. Is there because Georgia's Arsenal.
Yeah.
Georgia's 100% Arsenal. I'm not sure who else. I saw one that said Tennessee in there. And then one said Oregon, and I was like,
Tennessee does have a lot of money in the football program.
Well, has a lot of money and had a really good run decades ago.
I don't know about maybe LSU.
That's to say, I wouldn't think Oregon because they're of the what the O stands for of the logo.
You've got to have at least, because there are what, six Premier League teams in the Super League, so you got to have six SEC teams.
There you go. So you'd have LSU, you'd have Alabama, you'd have Georgia, you'd have Tennessee, probably Florida.
Florida.
And then your sixth team, probably A&M, because they have enough money. A&M,
yeah.
Even though they've won nothing, but they have a ton of money. Yeah, so there's that. It's the whole point of it is that it's such a joke. And that, imagine if they did this in college football. Imagine if they said you are the top teams and you get to play for the real trophy, but you can't ever rotate. These are the teams. And if you start being terrible, then you don't get to get relegated. And the entire point of soccer is the promotion relegation system, which I know is, again, a million reasons why people are still mad at the MLS. But the MLS is also 25 years old. The Premier League is 150 years old.
Promotion and relegation in baseball.
I realize that messes up
the entire farm system.
And then your stadiums are like, you compare Dodger Stadium to like the local municipal Santa Cruz place. And it's like, what if the Dodgers lose? Then it's like, all right, you got to go play there. Like,
Tennessee Park, where the Nashville Sounds play, is apparently a pleasant place for an evening. I've never been there, but.
Well, I trust you more than me on that. I know I would have even worse odds, but yeah, regardless, it looks like this league is already on the face of the brink of collapse already. Chelsea, Manchester City, and Arsenal have all officially stated they are leaving the Super League. It still seems Liverpool might, but did want to add one more funny note of it. Four of the Super League's teams played yesterday. None won. None of them won. In fact, Leeds City had a equalizer in the 89th minute against Liverpool, and Leeds wore shirts before the game that says earn it. Like, you have to earn it. And they had banners in the stadium that were saying you need to earn it, everything. And like, and it was crazy. I mean, it's other teams are even like actively promoting you have to earn your spot, and this is awful. Like, it's crazy.
You really do love to see it. You love when the entire world bands against like a few rich people. Not very nice people that I was gonna say a bad word about.
It's pretty disgusting that it's been tried to be done, but fortunately it looks like it's going by. But again, the quote that's been repeated many times, what I'll end this section on: created by the poor, stolen by the rich. And it's been used many times over to describe the situation. Said before, I'm not telling you what the original context was, but it fits in very well with this. So RIP Bozo. The boat in the Suez Canal was stuck longer than the Super League lasted, so never forget that. Next up, we can move on to our NBA recap. We got actually a good chunk of NBA content coming in here, especially about Steph Curry. We have enough information on Steph that even Flight would be proud.
No. I think you have that wrong, Jack. We have a lot of information about Steph Curry and Zion Williamson specifically, because that's what today's show is going to focus on. They're on two not great teams. I think that's a fair thing to say.
This middling year. Almost play-in / kind of play-in.
Yeah, I mean, the Warriors may ride Steph Curry all the way into the playoffs. It's not looking good for the Pelicans. Really not. There's something wrong with this team, because Zion Williamson is unstoppable. I know you were at the Rangers game on Sunday, but have you gotten to sit down and watch even just a full half, a full quarter of Zion basketball this year?
And I have some, and it's really incredible to see what he can do with the ball, because that's sort of the point that I was at least seeing in a lot of how the Pelicans are able to win games, but also how they're able to lose games, and they live and die by the paint. This team is number one in offensive boards. They are sixth in points per game. They're eighth in shooting percentage, as well as being very high in defensive rebounding as well, which, what do all those things coincide with? Being good in the paint. But also, when you're 26th in three-point shooting, that tends to hurt a lot. And again, I saw you put down here 91% of Zion shots come within 10 feet of the bucket, which is not surprising, because again, a lot of this team has to live by the paint, and that just can't win you a ton of games, at least to the level that they're playing at here. And that to me is making me concerned about this team, because you have guys like Steven Adams, who are basically walking rebounds, and that's all they do. And then you have Zion scoring, and then B.I., Izzy, Brandon Ingram getting some good production out of here, coming off his most improved player season. But it's like this team needs they need more shooting. They need someone to get on the outside better, because you have Zion at the perfect position there. There's obviously not really any kind of improvement you can put on that, but they just need to be able to score more, because it's score more effectively from the outside and play better defense too, because you have a team that again scores very high, but just doesn't have it down to the defensive end.
Yeah. And I think that's largely due to the roster construction. They do not surround Zion with guys who can stretch the defense. Lonzo is an okay 3-point shooter, but he's not a high volume 3-point shooter. That's not his shot specifically. And it's gotten better since he's gotten in the league, but he's still not a good, what I would call a good 3-point shooter. He's probably around an average to slightly above average 3-point shooter. Eric Bledsoe, the stats can be misleading, because Eric Bledsoe is shooting 35%. I mean, yeah, I think around 35% from three. I don't have the number right in front of me right now, but I was doing a deep dive on this earlier. He's shooting around 35% from three. However, that's making about 1.6 threes a game and only attempting about five. So again, not a good 3-point shooter if you're only putting in one out of every five attempts you make, and that's all you're really taking in the game. And Eric Bledsoe has been terrible this year. He's been awful. He's been so bad. He's only averaging 11 points a game. He's not really helping out in the assist column. He's not great on defense. He can't stretch the defense whatsoever. You traded Drew Holiday away for probably the 26th overall pick in Eric Bledsoe. What in the world? I don't understand what this front office is doing, because while you had AD, it seemed like you got this massive haul, but none of these pieces have really been able to fit around Zion, and they haven't been able to really add anyone else that can really help him in that way. Because Zion can't stretch the defense yet. He's not there. That's not a part of his game. If you look at his shots, you said it, 91% come from within 10 feet. You compare that to Giannis Antetokounmpo, who is probably the most paint-dominant player in the league. I mean, when you think of guys who absolutely dominate the paint, you can look at Jokic and Embiid and those guys, but those guys stretch the floor a little bit more so than Giannis because of their three-point shooting ability. So Giannis is not a great three-point shooter. He's not a high-volume three-point shooter whatsoever. And while he's a completely different body type from Zion, he's the same type of threat when he's on the floor, the touch around the rim, the explosiveness to go over people, the strength to go through people on the offensive end. Even Giannis only shoots 66% of his shots in the paint, and he's 7 feet tall.
Yeah.
So what does that tell you? True. So what does that tell you? Zion does not have that in his game yet. And watching the Knicks game on Sunday, which went into overtime, I got to watch a fair amount of that game. I had my eyes on Zion the entire time. And he owns the paint when he's in. But in order for him to own the paint and for his team to win at the same time, you got to surround him with shooters, and he's got to be able to stretch the floor more. You see aspects of his game that are just unbelievable. I mean, they're everything is advertised. Some of the explosive plays he makes, just his coordination around the rim. I mean, there will be plays where, because he's so explosive, and this is one of his flaws, is what I was going to get to in a minute anyways, but sometimes he's so explosive that he gets ahead of himself. He plays faster than he can really hold on to the ball and make a controlled move. Yet, even when he loses the ball in midair, he had a couple times where he did this. He'll lose the ball, he'll lose possession, and he'll just grab the ball and go right back up with it and make a layup. Because he's that coordinated and he's that focused, and his hands are that great. His movement is a little clunky, and his jump shot needs to get better, and he needs to improve his handle. But if he can stretch his game out, I mean, we haven't seen a guy like this in the league that is as athletic and as big just in terms of bulky mass as Zion.
And that's very true. He's a guy that just can go and bully anyone that he wants in that area of the floor. And seeing this team kind of build around him has been interesting, to say the least. But yeah, again, they got to be able to spread the defense out. They got to be able to get more of the three ball in, because again, being sixth in points per game and then turning around and not even being close to the playoff race is deeply concerning for a franchise like this. So they have at least a good chunk of points down.
I think they're 26th in the league in three-point attempts and 23rd in three-point percentage. This is not a team that likes to shoot threes. This is not a team that can shoot threes at a high volume. And even with Brandon Ingram out there, it's not making a whole lot of difference when only one guy on the floor can really shoot the three at a high volume. That's what you need in today's NBA. That's the modern game. You have to be able to stretch the floor, especially for a guy like Zion. So I expect a lot of roster shakeup in the offseason for them.
I mean, we saw that what happened with getting rid of a really good defender like Holiday's done. I mean, that's shown pretty heavily here. I actually do have his jersey. It's one of the few teams I'm not a fan of. I have a few jerseys of, and I got his, and then he left a year later, and I was like, okay. But it's the cool New Orleans one with all the Mardi Gras colors. So, you know, it's still at least a nice thing to have. Next up, we have a player that is not particularly high in the MVP odds, but I think it's very silly that he is not. And that is the man himself, Steph Curry. I wrote at least, I think it's what, 8 or 9 different records that he's broken over the past month. I mean, it is, I think we've gone past the point of debate anymore on who is the greatest three-point shooter of all time. I don't really think that's no longer a debatable question. Steph Curry beat Kobe's record of 10 straight scoring 30 plus over the age of 33. Yeah, the all-time record, I think, is Harden that has like almost like 30 something games in a row, 47.9. First player to do so over 33 to get 11, actually, because it wasn't 10. It was in became 11. He had 11 3-pointers made in this game, which if you say that is ridiculous to have more than 10 threes in a game, it is not for Steph Curry because he has done it 21 times. 21. The next highest player is Klay Thompson with 5. And this is the next highest player ever. Not just current athletes that play in the NBA. Now, this is ever. Harden, Lillard, and JR all have 3, and then Zach LaVine has 2. Absolutely ridiculous. Steph has 3 games this season with at least 7 off-the-dribble 3-pointers made. The rest of the NBA has 1 game combined. Steph is 12th in MVP voting, at least on one betting set I saw, behind Luka, Gobert, and Donovan Mitchell. To name a few names, he's lower odds than. Curry has as many games of 10-plus 3-point made this season as the next closest player has in their career. He has 4. This week and a half, 4 of the 5 games he's played, 4 games has 10 plus 3-pointers made. Klay Thompson has 5 his entire career. I mean, that is a wild stat.
Steph has quadrupled Klay's career number. Steph has, 21 games now with 10 or more 3-pointers made. Klay 46 Thompson is next on the list.
5 games.
I'm calling Steph Curry for MVP right now, and I know we keep shifting on this, and Jokic certainly has an argument because that team is still doing really well even without Jamal Murray, even though we said they might not.
Oh, he's he's favored right now. He is the favorite.
I think the argument against Steph Curry for MVP starts with the fact that his team isn't necessarily winning a lot of games.
Now,
You could certainly make the argument that this is one of the worst teams in the league without Steph Curry, because they were one of the worst teams in the league without Steph Curry last year.
That's why I think that the MVP is even more deserved, because his value to that team is absolutely absurd compared to nearly any other player on any other team.
But even if you look at 2018 James Harden, those Rockets finished 4th in the West and won 53 games. And James Harden was going nuts on that team, of course, and that team didn't do anything. Well, I say didn't do anything. That team, I believe, went to the Western Conference Finals.
Was that when they had like this 27 threes like missed or something like that? Was that that game?
It was lost to the Warriors in 7 games? And I can't remember which one it was for the life of me. The CP3, I believe, was 2017. But James Harden, nonetheless, James Harden won the MVP in 2018 and averaged 36 points a game. That team still finished 4th in the West.
That was 2018. Yeah, 2018.
Yeah,
27 missed threes in a row.
You look at all the other guys who have won MVP throughout the years, and their teams have been good in conference. And I just can't fathom a team with a 9th seed in the conference having an MVP. Whether that's warranted or not is one thing, but I just don't think that the MVP voters are going to give it to Steph Curry. Based on the fact that his team's not winning a ton of games and might end up in the play-in tournament. In fact, that's probably their best hope for the playoff at this point, unless Steph just continues to be ridiculous and then delivers them to like a top 6 seed, in which case, yeah, he 100% deserves the MVP award.
And I understand that angle. It's just, to me, I think it's silly that the design is set up where if Steph Curry is the exact same player with the exact same stats, like everything else is the exact same, and you give him elite players around him and they win more games, even though same exact stats, all of a sudden he gets an MVP versus when he wouldn't. I just think that's silly where it's like it's an individual award that isn't based on an individual performance, or is partly based on individual performance. It's sort of weird to me that it's like, isn't the point of it to be an individual award, not a team award? And And I get that it is to a degree. Like, yeah, when Giannis won it, it wasn't Chris Middleton didn't win MVP. Giannis won it. But at the end of the day, if he didn't have a lot of those role players around him that were very good, he wouldn't have won it despite him being good. And so I think that's weird to win an MVP sort of despite that, or to lose, like, I don't know, like you lost the MVP award because you didn't have people that you can't control play better. I think that's a weird concept. And I know that's how it is. I'm not trying to debate that's how it functions. I mean, and yes, that's absolutely true that that's happened many times before. This is not the first time, but I just think it's sort of weird. That's how it functions. I don't know. I never like that sort of notion of it. And this is also not common there, but a couple of other stats too. Steph Curry had 46 3-pointers made in his last 5 games, which is the most by any player in that stretch. I think he has 78 in his last 11 games. 78. And also he had 5 40-point games in April, passing Kobe and MJ for the most 40-point games in a single month. And that was as of April 19th. With the whole other week and a half to go, beats out any player in the history of basketball, except maybe like before they started counting a lot of that back then. I don't know how far back the record goes, but Kobe and Michael Jordan both shared it with, I think, 4. So pretty insane there. A couple other news here. LaMarcus Aldridge for Brooklyn retires due to a heart condition. Sad for him to have something like this happen. I know players don't want to go out in ways like this, but obviously Aldridge had an incredible career, long stint with the Trailblazers. I know they posted a lot of nice stuff for him, and we'll see if they end up retiring the number. But yeah, really good run by LaMarcus there. And lastly, vaccinated players are now officially good to go. I'm sorry, I don't know if that was actually players. I know that was like staff and personnel can travel abroad. I'm not entirely sure if players falls under that, so that might be wrong. But I know personnel can, and this is mainly done to help out scouts, to help analyze international talent. October 2020, it was officially banned, and then now since vaccines have been out rolling on a much higher basis, I think we're now at over a quarter of all Americans are eligible Americans are fully vaccinated. So I saw the vaccination rates continue to get much better. And at least for the NBA scouts and personnel's sake, it seems to have improved their work as well. So good for that. Keep getting the shots. We're going well. Role player of the week here. And I'm aware that this was a pretty easy pick here. I know you were thinking about this too, but LeGuenz Dort, the Dortmus continues. Happy Dortmus again. 7th Oklahoma City player to score 20 plus in a quarter. He went 7 for 7 from the field, 5 for 5 from 3. Dear Lord. And yeah, we still thought this Heat team or this Heat team, this Thunder team was still going to be pretty bad. They're riding near the bottom of the rankings, so we were pretty right on that. But Dort's pretty entertaining to watch. I still love Shea as well. So there's still some very, very good pieces on this team. And I think Oklahoma City can be a dangerous team in a couple of years if they keep getting all these players back.
Yeah, and my role player of the week, we're going to segue. This is a great segue into what we're going to segue into. Clint Capella is my player of the week. Would you call Capella a role player? I would call Capella a role player.
I'd say so because
he's a starter, but he contributes a significant amount to that team, but he's not exactly the star of that team, especially on offense.
No, it's weird. I think if we had a better roster and a more rounded out team, like that's what I'm trying to compare to. Like if he was on a team like the Lakers or the Nets, would he be that? And he would 100% be a role player there. Well, but he also wasn't playing nearly as well as he is now. And a lot of the stats he's putting up now and what I think he's doing way better with us and the system we have than what, I mean, I think he's doing better anyway here, but despite the fact there obviously was a lot more talent on those Houston teams, but I've still liked him more when he's been here. But I mean, I'd say he is, but I think he's on the cusp of it where he's not a guy like DeAndre Hunter or like that's a very solid role player or like Cam Reddish. Like I think,
right. He's not coming off the bench, but he's also leading you in usage rate.
It's very obviously Trey and John Collins are the two big names on the team and the two big producers on the team. And he's the third guy up and the clear big man, but I wouldn't put it past that. I've just really enjoyed watching a lot on that end. But yeah, I'd say he's a role player, but is not far off from being a star on that end. I wouldn't say he's far off. But
Clint Capella had a 20-20 game
again
in the past week. I believe there were 3 blocks involved there too. So Clint Capella is my role player of the week, which is a great segue into buying and selling. That's right. We're going to talk some stonks. And I am buying the Atlanta Hawks, finally. I know this
finally,
makes you happy.
God.
I know this makes you proud.
We're the fourth Hawks, in the East.
The Atlanta Hawks are 8-2 in the month of April in 10 games. There are absolutely lighting it up offensively, even though a lot of their players have been out. In the month of April, they're top five in three-point percentage. They're top five in in free throws attempted. And if we know anything about the league, what do you need to do nowadays? Three-pointers and free throws. They're not great on defense, but they're passable in a lot of areas. I mean, they're still like, this team is still 24th in defensive rating. It's not a great defensive team, but they are passable in a lot of aspects, and they have a couple nice individual defensive pieces. So I think Atlanta could actually make a run into the second round of the playoffs. Now, whether they could play spoiler to one of the big teams, I'm not exactly sure, but I am buying Atlanta as a potential threat in the first round to a Boston or a middling team or a Miami or a team like that should someone get hot. And I mean, gosh, I know they've been doing well as of late, but I'm selling the Washington Wizards, man.
It's still
just look at the teams that they've beaten. We already talked about the Pelicans. The Pelicans suck. We already talked about we've talked about the Kings ad nauseum. The Kings are terrible. The Pacers are not very good. I mean, over their last 10 games, they haven't really beaten that many teams except for the Jazz. They did beat the Jazz. I will give them credit for that. They almost blew a massive lead in that game, but they did beat the Jazz. But I still don't think this team is good. I don't think this is a playoff team. I think this is a very, very short-lived little burst before Russell Westbrook returns back to his ways.
Now, remember, they are also tied with the Bulls right now at that 10 seed spot. So
right.
It is
like
actually
the Bulls better down the stretch.
Oh, and we, as we should. But I also wanted to mention one sort of weird stat here. The Pacers are 17-14 on the road and only 9-17 at home. Isn't that bizarre?
Must be something about living in Indiana, man.
It's by far the worst differential of either team. They're the only team in the East that still has single digit home wins. The West actually has two, but it's the Thunder and Rockets that are just horrendous. But the Rockets are 15-43. Like, they were a solid playoff team for years. And I get, obviously, Harden leaving, but like, good Lord, 15-43. Oh, man. But moving on to my teams, I did want to mention just a note on Capella back when you mentioned that. He's the first Hawks player to have multiple 20-20-3 games in a season since Dominique Wilkins in 1999. So, yeah, it's been pretty good having Clint Capella here. We finally have a decent big man for the first time, really, since Horford. So my stock up teams here, I know we've been a little back and forth on this team a while this year, but how about the Knicks? 6 wins in a row is the best mark of anyone in the East right now. And the Knicks have played themselves back up to a 6 seed, which gets them out, at least at the moment, gets them out of having to deal with anything with the play-in tournament. Now, again, the 6 teams they beat were not particularly amazing. They beat the Grizzlies, who were being decent, the Raptors, who are pretty disappointing, the Lakers very easily, but that was, again, without LeBron and AD. Pelicans twice, and then at the Mavericks, which the Mavericks one was actually, that was an impressive win. But not the most difficult, but not pretty cakewalk either. It really wasn't that bad. And this is after a pretty rocky stretch. In fact, actually, before the 6-game win streak, the Knicks had won 1 of their last 6. They went on a 1-5 stretch, and then 6-0. So it's been a weird last sort of month, I guess, for the Knicks, but that win has been pretty big for them. They're really getting their stride right back in. And how about the Atlantic Division? I know we never talk about divisions because divisions are basically irrelevant in the NBA, but the Atlantic Division, the 39-18 76ers, 38-19 Nets, 31-27 Celtics, 31-27 Knicks, and then you have Toronto at the bottom. But with overall record, that's a pretty dang good division. So lots of good teams throughout a lot of what this division has to offer. My other team, as I was saying, to stock up on at least on now based on recent play, I was I know they just lost recently, but the Celtics were 8-1 in their last 9 games before their loss. So a really good stretch for the Celtics, a team that's trying to get themselves back up. They're 5th seed right now, and I'm just liking a lot of sort of how they have been looking. Teams to look down upon, I know we talked about them to death, but I had New Orleans on here, so I'm just going to skip over that. And my second one is the Oklahoma City Thunder, simply because this team makes my eyes hurt whenever I see them play basketball. Their losing streak, you may look at it and say, well, there's no way they're that bad. Well, it turns out when you lose 11 games in a row,
That's
pretty god awful, especially when their last 3 losses, and I'm not kidding, are the Wizards, Raptors, and Pistons are their last 3 games and all lost. And to be fair, they were by a very, very low amount. Like, it was not by a lot, but it was pretty terrible. But there is some good news for the Oklahoma City Thunder, which I actually did not know this until right now reading it, but Chesapeake Energy will no longer be the name of the Oklahoma City Thunder Arena. And that's kind of good, because I thought that name was kind of lame. So maybe they can get a new name. But yeah, Chesapeake Energy
Almost
Arena.
As lame as the
is
city
no more.
Of Oklahoma City.
It's pretty tough to beat that out. No, but I only wanted to go just to be able to see something. But yeah, it's pretty tough. The Chesapeake Energy Arena had been named the arena name since 2011, which is only a couple of years after Oklahoma City had made their move from Seattle, a move that no one liked. And it, yeah, hosted the 2012 NBA Finals, 3 Western Conference Finals, which, yes, yeah, still never really won anything. But yeah, it's going to be very interesting to see what this may end up being. Hopefully it'll be something more interesting. You know, we always want to have fun names for stadiums. And that's going to move us on to the playoff look. We haven't really done this section yet, simply because we actually have never done this section. Well, because last year we were still dealing with COVID and the NBA bubble had not come to existence for another few months. And so, yeah, this is our first look and first dive into some playoff talk of NBA, because we never really got to properly do that last season. So out of our teams here, I'm basically going to be focusing on what 538 says. If you don't know 538, it's an excellent place to stack all sorts of different kind of stats and odds and percentages and ratings. And it's a great spot for that kind of stuff. Really user-friendly deal. And I'm pretty sure it's through ESPN. I think that it's through them. Yeah, ABC News stuff.
Do it through ESPN.
Yeah, it's through ABC News stuff. I just checked the bottom of the screen to see who owned them. And that is who it is. So with that, I'm going to be using their odds to basically calculate who is basically in, who is basically out. And then, of course, when the teams get officially locked in, we'll then know. But looking in the East first, now the locks here, again, as of right now, on April 20th, we do not have any official locks or eliminations, but we can pretty much go ahead and call a bunch of teams because it's kind of obvious. For example, the 76ers, the Nets, the Bucks, the Hawks, and the Celtics, I'm all pretty much 100% confident they're going to make the playoffs. I would say those teams, to me, out of the 10 spots, are all but in, unless some insane thing happens. Also, I would have the Heat really, really close to that. I would put them at like 95%. I'm really, really confident about the Heat, but maybe not 100 yet, but it would take a disaster for that not to happen. Now, after that, it gets interesting, because then in the race behind that, you have the Knicks, the Hornets, the Pacers, the Raptors, and then I actually also had Washington and in Chicago in here. Which I know may not be very super high odds. Wizards are actually 7% and the Bulls are 6%. So it'd be pretty tough, but
yeah,
somebody's got me the 10 seed.
I want to ask you, who do you trust the least out of any of these teams? Pick 2 out of any of those in the hunt teams in the East.
Well, it would have been the Hornets if they weren't getting Ball back. I would have been not confident, but the fact they're getting him back, I'm very confident they'll make the playoffs now. I've switched up big time. Knicks, again, I feel like are on a really good run now, and again, are over 500 again. Wizards, I think I can safely rule to be done. Maybe not yet, just because their odds are too high for me to rule them out yet, because I'm thinking like less than 1% is when I would rule them out. But unless the Wizards get on a big run, it's tough for me to have any faith in them. And then maybe the Raptors here, just even though the Raptors have 12% better odds right now than the Bulls, I just think the Bulls roster and the way they're playing is still kind of better, despite the fact that the records are only one game apart. And that's the thing.
I actually can't believe you went there, because I was going to go with the exact same two teams. Maybe throw Indiana in there. I don't trust Indiana very much, especially without Miles Turner now.
That's next up. Yeah. I just don't. Yeah, because Miles Turner being out really messes things. They have 42% odds to make it right now. But
Washington with Westbrook and the rest of that roster is just terrible. Like, I don't trust them. And then I don't trust the Raptors for whatever reason. I'm really with you. This team feels like they gave up a while ago. I mean, I know they were trying to sell Kyle Lowry at the trade deadline. It just doesn't seem like they're super inspired, and they also don't have a super talented roster unless Fred VanVleet is dropping 53 points. So, yeah, I'm kind of out on the Raptors too, and definitely out on the Wizards, like I said earlier.
These last three teams in the East are the three that I can say now are done.
We can definitively.
Was it official? Yes, which of course it isn't official, but they're not going to make the playoffs. And these are the Cleveland Cavaliers, the Detroit Pistons, and the godforsaken Magic. So these three teams are just absolutely horrific. And fortunately, which I think I mentioned this to you about my Hawks tickets that I got the chance to be able to go to some games at the end of the season. The Hawks play four games in a row to end the regular season all at home. And the Hawks organization with the ticket thing I bought said, you can go to any of these games you want. Tickets are crazy cheap. You can get two for free with prepaid when I paid in like October. Two you can include for that. And then two you can pay like $25 for. And the games, the four games, which mind you, could have been anyone. Wizards again, Magic, Rockets.
Yeah, garbage time basketball, baby.
Which, you know, as a team that's trying to make a higher seed in the playoffs, I have no complaints about playing those four teams to end the regular season. No complaints. So I'm loving the seeding right here. And, hey, they need to lose. They need to get their picks in. So I have no complaints, even though I would much rather it be like, oh, yeah, we're going to have the Nets, Sixers, and Lakers, which they could have had, and I could have gotten a free ticket for it. But thank you very little, Hawks. So moving on to the West here. You're going to have the Jazz, Suns, Clippers, Nuggets, and Lakers in. I think those teams are, without any doubt, remotely, those teams are all in, no question.
Yeah.
And
I agree there.
This next one I kind of put in the same category as the Heat, and that's the Portland Trailblazers, a team that's like, might as well put them in, but there isn't 100%, but like, it's as close as you can get. After that, it gets kind of interesting, because then you have your kind of next tier of teams here, and that's the Mavericks, Grizzlies, and Warriors that are all either a toss-up or a pretty favored one. I think the Mavericks are more favored, but like I think Mavericks would be a little closer to the Blazers here. But Grizzlies and Warriors, I think, are kind of locked in those kind of like toss-up ones. And then my last couple that still have a fighting chance, but may probably not, are the Spurs and the Pelicans.
Yeah, the Pelicans are on their way out soon.
Yeah, which we have talked about, I think, maybe 5 minutes this entire season about the San Antonio Spurs. I just kind of thought about that, and I was like, we have not talked about the Spurs. But they are, and there's nothing to talk about with them. So it's like I'm thinking about it, really. We have not talked about the Spurs. Then the bottom four teams here, which these all are just absolutely horrifically bad teams. These are the Kings, the Thunder, the Timberwolves, and the Rockets. Oh, man, these teams are nowhere near making the playoffs. Absolutely done, and we have basically no need to worry about them anymore. So that is your lineup there, and that's all I got for the NBA.
That's all I got, too. What else we got?
So, well, we got some other stuff going on. We're actually going to be ending our podcast with the other sports roundup, which we'll get to right now. Just switching it up some to get our more relevant stuff out of the way first. But in our college sports update, of course, we got our big TCU news right in here. The first one, we're getting good transfers in basketball. Thank the Lord. Well, no, these have signed. You mean if they're good?
No, allegedly good.
Yes, allegedly good. We sure hope so. Micah Peavy from Texas Tech joins TCU Hoops. This one's actually a really big one. I'm really excited about him. That's a big deal. Damian Ball from Memphis also joins the Frogs, which is actually funny because he passed on us out of high school. We tried to recruit him, and he said no, went to Memphis, and then he came back. Yeah, but it still is kind of funny that he said no, and then later it's like, hey, guys. So I guess it's a small world. So good for basketball to get a little bit strengthened up. I didn't have it on here, but Taryn Frank officially joins Vanderbilt. So we kind of basically did like an unofficial trade because we got Max Evans from them. So we kind of like a trade, but not a trade, a college trade, if that makes any sense. Also, we once again own Oklahoma State. Frog Ball sweeps Oklahoma State on a weekend series. All games TCU trailed, and yet we came back and won. We shout beat Oklahoma Shout State.
Gene Wood.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Great performance.
Brandon Taylor.
Oh, yeah.
Big time freshman. Big time.
Loving him this year. He's been great. So TCU actually had beaten or swept Oklahoma State in every of the three major sports. Beat them in football cleanly. Dominated them in the basketball game at home, despite the fact that Kate Cunningham talked more than he actually did in the first half. And beat Oklahoma State all three times in baseball. So 7-0 against the Pokes this year, which we love that. I have no idea when the last time we did that, if ever. But proud of TCU for coming out and playing super well against them. Ironically, I think our best team out of any of these, which is women's soccer, I think they're the one team that actually, I think, lost to Oklahoma State. Is that right? Did they?
No.
I'm trying to remember the women's soccer team against Oklahoma State because I know we played them this semester. Did we win that game? Did we?
We did win that game.
So we did. Oh, so I was thinking that was the one because I know we lost one game. I'd forgotten which one it was. So, yeah, we still own Oklahoma State. Also, TCU men's tennis, while they did end up losing to Baylor, they still did secure a share of the Big 12 title. We could have won it outright, but the loss to Baylor after that did not seal it. We beat Texas Tech, which is what ended up winning it. TCU also won in 2016, 2017, and 2018 the regular season title. Of course, the 1 year I worked it was 2019, and then 2020 was canceled for COVID. So annoyed that I couldn't get more close-up coverage of this, but that's being selfish. I'm really happy for the tennis team. I know a few of the guys on there from my time that I covered them, and really, really proud of them. Really, really excellent squad, as they always are every year, and great to see them continue to play well. And lastly, women's soccer enters the NCAA tournament as a program high number four ranked seed. They will play the winner of New Mexico and Navy because they have byes in the women's soccer tournament. So we will see who the Frogs will play pretty soon. It's on April 24th is the first round. So 4 days from now, it will continue as well throughout the month of May. Next up, football playoffs. We still got football playoffs, and I actually am wanting to watch some of these because it's free football, and we always love that, especially in the spring because, you know, we would have had April 20th. I think this was a year ago we were supposed to have, I think, the XFL championships was around this time. So, which, of course, never happened, but we're supposed to, and probably will when it gets back. But, yeah, RIP my dogs, XFL, but we'll see if they come back. So FCS playoff bracket revealed your number one overall seed, South Dakota State, not North Dakota State, South Dakota State. The Jackrabbits coming in at number one. They'll be playing Holy Cross, Southern Illinois, Weber State, Delaware, Sacred Heart, Davidson, Jacksonville State, James Madison, the three overall seed versus VMI, Virginia Military Institute, Missouri State, North Dakota. North Dakota State coming in at 6-2. They lost twice this season, remember, versus Eastern Washington, where the Groves brothers actually left to go in basketball. The Groves brothers left to go to OU, so unfortunate for TCU basketball having to play them. Monmouth versus the two overall seeds, Sam Houston, is going to close things out. Sam Houston went 6-0 this season. But yeah, some kind of weird records on here. Like Holy Cross only went 3-0 and made this tournament. Missouri State went 5-4 and made the tournament. So it was really weird in the FCS this year.
Is it earned or selected? I'm not that familiar with FCS football.
I really don't know how it functions here because I don't really know what happened last year either. But I think they'd have to have some kind of automatic qualifying with champions of conferences here, but I'm not 100% sure, but all will play on April 24th. Quarterfinals will happen on May 1st and 2nd, and then semifinals will occur on May 8th. I would assume the championship would happen the week after. I'm not entirely sure. 10 automatic
qualifiers, 16 team field, by the way.
Well, there you go. So basically doing what college football should do, which is the 10 main teams.
Yeah, I was about
to mention that. It's not that hard.
Really not.
But again, the one big thing in college football that has, which people tend to forget, which is a fair point, is that FCS operates under the NCAA with the playoffs. Football does not. The college football playoff is not an NCAA thing. It's a college football playoff entity thing. So FBS operates under poll guidelines, and polls dominate everything, while FCS functions like every other college sport where it does NCAA controlling everything. So if the FBS switched into an NCAA model, we would have those cool NCAA trophies, you know, those for the basketball, all those things. Yeah, they don't earn that. You don't get those for FBS.
I'm not even a proponent of the NCAA, and that sounds better.
Yeah, so that's kind of the funny thing is that, like, yeah, the NCAA has an endless list of problems, but, you know, same thing with the Super League. Like, your alternate, your original team, the original thing is still pretty awful, but it's a lot better than the new awful thing. So it's the definition of lesser between two evils. Lastly, the number one high school basketball player, Chet Holmgren, officially commits to Gonzaga. This dude is like, it's hard to even describe him. He is an incredibly long,
about 170 pounds.
It's so weird, but he's so good.
he's actually skin and bones, but hopefully with a college weight program and maybe the Michael Phelps diet, he'll put on a little bit of weight and be a beast in the league. But yeah, dude can do everything on the floor. He's an incredible shot blocker. He's athletic for his size. He can pull up from outside. He really is an incredible player. It's going to be another phenomenal looking team from Gonzaga next year.
Next up, we have soccer news, because no, we're not done yet with that. We still have a few more updates that did not surround the Super League. Starting out with the actual thing that is a super cool idea that the Super League was trying to replicate, Champions League. Champions League is still playing. And this was the leg two of the quarterfinals, which is a last minute goal by Porto. They still couldn't overcome a 2-0 hole. Chelsea will advance on. PSG falls 1-0. To Bayern, but a 3-2 W in the last leg sends the Parisians through to the semifinals. The defending champs with Bayern Munich are now done. Man City power past Dortmund 2-1, advanced onto the semis pretty easily. And then Real Madrid and Liverpool end leg two in a scoreless draw, which will send Real through Liverpool, ending the season trophyless. No Premier League title, no FA Cup, no Champions League, which is all after their incredible, incredible season last year. Yeah, Liverpool fell apart pretty quick. So that's the end of their triumphs. Barcelona wins the 2021 Copa del Rey. This also gives Sergiño Dest the first ever American to win the Spanish Cup. Never happened in history before. So shout out to him. He'll definitely be a player going big on our roster with our World Cup qualifying and any of that going on over the next couple of years. Jose Mourinho, one of the most famous and recognizable soccer managers in the world, was sacked from Tottenham. Kind of was a little bit parted ways and mutual, though, because he was very outward against the Super League, and then Tottenham just kind of got rid of him, which we're seeing that plan work out well. He actually was the first time in 20 years that he left a club with no trophies. He was only there for three seasons, 2019 and 2021. He also had a 51% win ratio, which is the second lowest he's had at a manager anywhere. So wasn't really going super great there regardless, even with the likes of Harry Kane and Kim. So it just wasn't quite it. Lastly, we have MLS opening weekend, because finally we have some MLS news, which I always love to talk about, even though it's obviously not extremely relevant on a global soccer stage, but we always love talking about it. And here, Houston taking down San Jose in the opening match of the season 2-0. Houston was absolutely horrid last season, so this is a really great way for them to start the season off. Seattle had perhaps the most impressive win of the entire weekend, a 4-0 drubbing of playoff rival Minnesota United. Really, really good win by Seattle here. I did not expect it to be that bad. Orlando and Atlanta, the quote-unquote rivals, as people like to call us, finished with a 0-0 draw. Joseph Martinez is still undefeated through 7 meetings with the rival, which I still think is hilarious. And Orlando fans got apparently really mad on Twitter when I brought that up to them, because he only played 20 minutes at the end and did basically nothing. And I still pointed out the fact that they still have yet to beat any Atlanta team that's ever fielded him, because the only wins they had over us were last year when his ACL was torn. So I'm like, still can't beat him. Next up, CF Montreal, Club de Foot, as they're called, which, yes, again, is their official new name. They finished their first match as no longer the Impact with a 4-2 win over Toronto FC, a pretty surprising win here, highest scoring match of the weekend. 2 second half goals push LAFC over Austin FC in the Texans' first match ever. This is definitely a battle of the two teams that everybody hates, and no one really knew who to go for, because LAFC have the most detestable fans and Austin FC has the most detestable owner. So it's who do you hate more? And so I just didn't even bother to watch much of this. But yeah, Austin, it's pretty predictable to lose their first game. Expansion sides basically never win game one. It's nearly impossible. And again, LAFC is an incredible team, so really difficult to win those games. Despite an opening goal, NYCFC fall on the road to DC United 1-2 out there in Audi Field. FC Dallas, Colorado, this game I actually attended in person. They finished 0-0 with Barrios' return. FC Dallas has still never lost a home opener since 2009. So very, very good run from Dallas there. Paxton Pomykal also made a return, which I had no clue was happening, and saw him return and lost my mind because he was out basically most of the entire season in 2020, despite going to the All-Star game in 2019 and being one of the best young players in the entire league. Actually, maybe would have been gone by now to Europe if he had played the entirety of last season. So I'm really sad of him to get that injury. He's had an unfortunate history with injuries, but Paxton's a very, very good player. Excited to see him. And then Barrios, seeing him not in FC Dallas shirt was really weird. He's been a very, very long time, huge fan favorite player, and was traded away because I don't know. Dallas usually trades away their good young players for some reason, but he was a good guy. Everyone was very happy to see him back. He had a standing ovation from the crowd when he was subbed off later in the game. So that was pretty cool to see. You always love, you know, the players coming back and for their old teams and getting a lot of respect. And he actually did that. He took the team photo with our team. He got in the lineup, you know, all the soccer players kneel together and like take the team photo. He went in and took the photo with us. And when he did that, it went all huge on the internet because it was replicating when Ronaldinho did the same thing with Barcelona back years ago. So it was sort of emulating that moment. Another New York team scored first and lets two in. New Jersey team, as the New York / New Jersey Red Bulls fall to Sporting Kansas City. I refuse to let that go. They play in New Jersey. They're from New Jersey. It's the New Jersey Red Bulls. They're not the New York Red Bulls. I don't understand. Next up, four goals scored in the opening 27 minutes between Chicago and New England. Somehow still finish in a draw. Our first red card also of the season with Jones from New England. Nashville and Cincinnati finish in a 2-2 draw despite a 2-0 lead for the Queen City in the opening 12 minutes. So good for Nashville to come back quickly from that deficit and earn themselves a point against a Cincinnati team that I do think will be better. They were really bad last year and the year before, but I think they're on the up and up at some point. A wild back and forth game ends a 3-2 win for the Galaxy hosting Inter Miami, who is going through quite the controversy. Miami right now actually added a fourth DP, which is a designated player spot. Doing so violated MLS rules, which was incredibly stupid of them, and David Beckham, who's leading the team. And they could face really big time sanctions from that because you can't just add another player. Designated players are classified by how much they're paid. And so you basically can't get super high paid players all in one team. And that breaks the rules. They do this to ensure parity, but it also kind of hurts the league because then you can't really get a lot of really good players to come here. So it's kind of a wishy-washy thing. With that, they push down Pellegrini.
Maybe they should start a very, very good league. Athlete,
but yeah, maybe
American Super League.
And they pushed down Pellegrini down into Fort Lauderdale CF, which is their USL League One squad who plays North Texas, the reserve team for FC Dallas that I work for. So, it's pretty bad when you're a 24-year-old international that comes to America to play soccer and you're really good and getting paid a ton of money and you have to get sent to the minor leagues where the kids and the injured guys play because your team can't afford you technically. So it's a really bad scene in Miami because they need to fix this. And right now the player is understandably furious because he can't even play on the first team. So that screws over his odds of getting a better job later. So it's bad. So hopefully Miami can get that figured out soon, but you don't like to see them lose game one after dealing with that. First match since winning MLS Cup, Columbus will draw defending Supporters Shield winner Philadelphia 0-0. Kind of surprising considering how huge these two teams were last year, and the match was pretty boring overall, which wouldn't have thought that coming. Cavallini's lone strike in the 49th proves the difference for the Whitecaps. Vancouver Whitecaps take down the Portland Timbers 1-0 in a pretty surprising win. The Whitecaps have been a terrible team the last few seasons, but a really big win for them. And we're not going to go through this every single weekend. I just wanted to go through all the big games on opening weekend just because I'm excited that MLS is officially back. I'll be covering some more stuff like that when it gets through. Lastly, we'll end off with baseball. A few notes here. The Braves won on a walk-off single from Swanson, breaking a four-game losing streak. You'll love to see it. Also, Atlanta lost 13-4 to the Cubs this Saturday. And then they won 13-4 on Sunday. So that was a very perfectly balanced as all things should be moment where the Braves came out and somehow replicated the inverse score, which I don't know, a 13-4 seems a pretty hard score to accomplish. Yeah. And yet it was done twice in a weekend. And the Braves had 4 home runs and 6 hits in the first inning. So bats finally getting hot. Took long enough.
That's a hot start. That's the way you want to start a baseball game, I feel like.
Braves have 25 home runs already this season, which is league leading. So been big for them. And I'm actually wearing my Acuña jersey today. So very, very happy for them. Yankees actually got swept by the Rays this weekend, which is pretty surprising. Yankees and Braves actually, funny enough, coincidentally, both played each other this week and their only meeting of the season. Yankees got swept by the Rays. They're last in the AL East, sitting last. So not looking good for the Yanks so far early in the season, which I'm certain that nobody outside of New York is complaining about. Viber from Cleveland, their starting pitcher, earned 13 strikeouts in an incredible game against the Cincinnati Reds. Again, the Reds a playoff team last year, so not really a messing around guys there in Cincinnati. Which, speaking of Cincinnati, the Bengals got new uniforms as well. I didn't mention that either. The Bengals got a whole new uniform set.
Okay.
They're just like Cincinnati. They're just
an improvement over the last uniform.
Yes, and they got rid of the Bengals logo at the chest. Now it says Bengals spelled out, which that looks better. They got rid of those hideous side panelings,
hideous
shoulders.
The old uniforms,
the top of the back.
Okay, here's the thing. Here's the thing, and here's my point about the Bengals' new uniforms being okay. Because for any other team, they'd be bad, but the Bengals' uniforms were so bad that I didn't want to watch Bengals games.
And that's the only reason you want to watch Bengals games.
That's far from the only reason, but it was a big reason.
I was like, wait a minute, you had to watch Bengals football.
No. But like, even when they were playing the Titans, like, it was horrific to watch because it was just an eyesore. These uniforms are disgusting.
So since the Bucks also changed, because they were going to be on my hit list next for this, who's next that needs to have an update? Because I have two teams right now, two teams that I know right now need to get updated.
Seattle and Carolina.
Those actually weren't either of my two, though. Seattle's a little stuck in 2010 with those uniforms, and then Carolina's stuck in like 2004,
like 2012,
when they were good and were good in those uniforms. My two teams in mind were the Cardinals and the Broncos.
Okay.
They're really they're like 06, 07 is what they look like.
I could see both of those. Obviously, the Packers probably have the most outdated jerseys, but those are also the most classic jerseys.
It's like the Chiefs. The Chiefs are not going to update. Like, what?
Yeah.
Well, I don't want a black Chiefs uniform. Like,
well, no. Yeah, I was saying was the Packers like to wear they still wear the old like Reebok mesh jerseys.
Yeah. And that's different though, because that's a literal jersey update versus like a different scheme change or design look.
I think the Panthers are number one in terms of teams that need a uniform update, because I mean, the silver pants are just terrible. I don't even think they've changed uniforms since they came into the league.
The Panthers logo was changed a couple of times.
I do remember
that.
I mean, they've tweaked it, but they haven't really changed their uniform. I think they could go for a lot more sleek look. I really like the black and blue and silver that they got going, and I just think it could be a whole lot cleaner than it currently is. But yeah, the Seahawks, like you said, are kind of stuck in 2010. And if that does it for you, Jack, that does it for me. Thank you so much for listening to the Blanket Coverage Podcast. We will be back later this week finishing up the exit interviews. We had a technical difficulty once again last week. The exit interview from last week will be going up today. We'll be recording more this week. We've got draft next week. We're going to do a mock draft. It's going to be big. It's going to be great. And we can't wait for that. But until then, from Fort Worth, Texas, I am Noah Parker.
And I'm Jack Wallace. Peace out, y'all.
Peace out, y'all.